Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Next up is Ray McGovern, veteran intelligence professional for Sanity, formerly with the CIA for 27 years as an analyst. Now a peacenik, travels around giving speeches about peace. And he writes for consortiumnews.com and at raymcgovern.com. We run virtually everything by him, I think, at antiwar.com as well. The latest is The Risk of a Ukraine Bloodbath, running today at antiwar.com. You can find it again as well at consortiumnews.com. Welcome back, Ray. How are you?
Thank you, Scott. Doing well.
Good, good. Happy to have you here. Welcome back again. Appreciate you keeping up on this very important subject for us. And so tell us about this risk of Ukraine bloodbath. You're saying here that the Americans and the Ukrainians have split off from the Europeans on the issue of negotiation with the East and with Russia. Is that right?
Yeah, it's become very evident in the last days that Poroshenko is really acting as a puppet of John Kerry and Victoria Nuland and the other neoconservatives. And more important, he thumbed his nose at the rulers. I mean, I'm not talking about the foreign ministers now. I'm talking about the rulers of France, of Germany, and of Russia, as they talked on a conference call for 2 hours on Sunday. They did everything they could to dissuade him from attacking the East and the Southeast, and instead renewing the ceasefire arrangement. And he announced very early on Tuesday, nothing doing. He was going to unleash, as he said, he was going to attack, using a very strong Russian Ukrainian word. He's going to attack and free all our lands. And of course, renewal of hostilities happened immediately. So one of the stories here, which is most interesting, is that the French and the Germans, together with the Russians, split off from John Kerry and company, and joined with the Ukrainian foreign minister. The four foreign ministers met in Berlin yesterday. They appealed for renewal of the ceasefire. I haven't seen any evidence that this has received any resonance in Ukraine. So we're in a situation where the Germans and the French pretty much dismissed the British as a clone of Washington, and have moved together with the Russians, with Sergei Lavrov, their very astute foreign minister, pretty much orchestrating this, and met in Berlin at the invitation of the Berlin foreign the German foreign minister yesterday, and the Ukrainian foreign minister was a part of that, and their mutually agreed upon quadripartite statement called for a renewal of the ceasefire. Now, I don't know how that parses, because, as I say, Poroshenko has unleashed his forces, and if there's a bloodbath, then Nuland and Kerry may get their wish of more open Russian involvement in protecting what they consider to be Russians and pro-Russian citizens in the eastern Ukraine.
And what do they have to gain from that, provoking a worse response from Russia? They already lost Crimea.
Well, that's interesting. They want to make it worse. They want to encourage or trap or mousetrap Putin into invading Ukraine. You can imagine the hysteria that the right-wing media in this country would drum up at that point. And eventually, I think the Russians are afraid that they still have designs on Ukraine. Poroshenko has reiterated that Ukraine is still part of they still have designs on Crimea. Poroshenko has said that Crimea will always be part of Ukraine. And, that's the nub of the problem there. There's a terrifically big warm water port there that the Russians have put their navy in since Catherine the Great back in the late 18th century, as we're going through our own revolution. Russia was extending its rule down to and including the Crimea. So, you know, if the putsch people, the people who took office, and Poroshenko, who was elected several weeks ago, decide that they really want to give the pro-Russian people, the separatists, or the people, separatists really isn't the right word. These are people who were against the coup d'etat on the 22nd of February. The president that they had elected was removed, and they didn't like that. And they took over some of the towns there and still have sway over them. So what we've got is a situation that's very volatile. And if Poroshenko sends his heavy artillery and his aircraft into those parts of the Ukraine and starts obliterating some of the cities there, then it's going to be very, very difficult for Putin to keep his powder dry and not to do something pretty flagrant, all while knowing that that's precisely what Kerry and Nuland and the neocons would like him to do to make things still worse for the Ukraine and still worse for Russian-U.S. relations.
Well, so in other words, the ultimate end still is just making sure America isn't getting along with Russia, although that's a pretty big way to go if they're willing to try to provoke the Russians into invading the East just to make the crisis war. I mean, they want to split the country in pieces and just run off with only the West? Is that it? I mean, because after all, they were able to spin Russia's taking of Crimea as the worst thing ever. Look, it's the rise of the USSR and blah, blah, blah. So they already lost the prime real estate that they wanted more than anything else. And they were able to make, you know, PR hay about it, make Russia look like the bad guy about it. Mission accomplished there, I don't think anybody would quibble with, right? But so what's really, I mean, if he invades the East, he might go all the way to Odessa, take the port and all that, and just keep all of eastern Ukraine. If they make things that bad, how do they benefit there?
Well, the Russians wouldn't benefit there either. It's Ukraine is a basket case.
I mean, I could see that. It's hanging a millstone around Russia's neck, making it look like even more their fault since they're making the larger overt move, but mm-hmm. It's still, well, and you know, I don't know, maybe they're stupid and they haven't really thought this through. I mean, we're talking about Robert Kagan's wife, so how bright can she be to be in love with that guy?
Well, there must be some special charm about Robert Kagan that escapes me. But
it's the Cocoa Puff stay-at-home dad thing.
But if you look at the disarray in which U.S. policy is in the Middle East and in Europe, now we have some of our close buddies in Europe, the Germans and the French, sort of asserting some independence for the first time since the war. Stupidity, idiot ideology, if you will, can play a big role here. But more important, Ukraine is a basket case economically. It's going to suffer either whether it goes toward the West or to the East. And the big price here is the strategic significance of Ukraine. And, of course, still on the books is the summit resolution at Bucharest, a summit of NATO leaders in April of 2008, which said Ukraine will become part of NATO. Now, that's going to be interesting in September when NATO meets again at the summit. They're meeting in Wales. Will they reiterate that desire to have the Ukraine part of NATO? And if so, why? Well, what worries the Russians is if you have that kind of resolution staying in force, then there's a sort of quasi-juridical reason for NATO to keep trying to take back the Crimea, to keep trying to wean Ukraine away from...
All right, I'm sorry, Ray, we got to stop. The bumper music is drowning you out and everything. We got to take this break, but we'll be right back, everybody, with the great Ray McGovern, veteran intelligence professional for Sanity, which I know is asking a lot, but, you know, we'll try. 1 minute. Okay, 4. Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Ray McGovern from ConsortiumNews.com. We also feature what he writes at AntiWar.com. The risk of Ukraine bloodbath is running today. And we're talking about how the Europeans are saying, hey, let's work with the Russians and let's convince the Kiev post-Putsch government to go ahead and come to some kind of settlement here. And the Americans have told the Ukrainians, the Kiev government, don't listen to Germany. Go ahead and keep picking a fight. Keep attacking the East. See if we can bait the Russians into making matters worse here for everyone. And, which, you know, same thing, different day around here, right, Ray? tell me this. What about Yarosh and the right sector neo-Nazi thugs, a.k.a. the National Guard of Ukraine? Who's training them? Who's arming them? How powerful a force are they? And what are they up to now?
Well, tongue-in-cheek, Scott, I'll have to tell you that they're a force for democracy. Because uh-oh, my suspicion is that the endowment, or the new endowment for democracy, some people consider that rightfully so, a successor to the CIA covert action department. They've been arming them and training them in places like Poland and other places that are friendly to this kind of thing for the right amount of remuneration from the United States Treasury. So long-winded answer, to be short, is that, they're fascists. They're trained by people who want to disrupt the Ukrainian government. And the worst part of it is that Russia remembers what fascism is like. Russia remembers what the followers, now the heirs of Stepan Bandera in the Ukraine, what he did in cooperation with Hitler in cleansing the vermin from the Ukraine. And the vermin were not only Jews, in his words, but Russians as well, Poles as well. So there is a recollection among people my age, at least, and maybe even a little younger in Europe, about what fascism is like. And that, I think, is part of why Putin and his very able foreign minister, Lavrov, are appealing to the French and to the Germans, because they know. I mean, they have not so recent, but very palpable memory of what fascism is like. And they also know what war is like, which is something that even though we've waged war abroad, and even though we suffered 9/11, we don't really know. And so what I see the French and the Germans doing now is saying, look, Newland, relax a little. If you think you can get Crimea back, forget about it. If you think you can get Ukraine into NATO, forget about it. Let's work this thing out without larger scale hostilities. Now, the Russians, for their part, they have the high cards here. I'm sure they're telling the Germans and the French, look, we don't want to do this. But if the Ukrainian forces start bloodying up the cities in Luhansk and Kramatorsk and some of the other places there in the Donbass area, we're going to be compelled to enforce a no-fly zone, shoot planes down, mess up your tanks and so forth. Do you really want that? And so I think that there's a chance that reason may prevail here and Poroshenko will kind of pull back if Washington lets him. The problem is that the fascists, I'm not sure that Poroshenko still has control over these people. They're doing their right sectors, Svoboda, other fascist kinds of units are doing their work in the Ukraine, and it's hard to turn that off once it's turned on. I don't think anybody wants a full-scale conflagration here, but we're talking about the possibility of a real confrontation between the United States of America and Russia for the first time in 25 years. Now, for us, we can have John Kerry, our Secretary of State, saying in answer to the question, they asked him, well, are you aware this could lead to this kind of confrontation? He says, oh, yeah, We're quite aware of this, that could lead to a large-scale war. We've taken that into account. Well, you know, if that's how blasé he is, if that's how nonchalant he is, then he's even dumber than I thought he was. And the operative thing here is, if I'm a Russian, I'm going to take that into account. I'm going to say, wow, we better stop them right now before they go even further in the Ukraine and elsewhere in Europe and even in Asia.
All right. And now, how many of these guys are there? Because it seems like, okay, I could see them being, you know, they're the SA, not the SS, right? They can mob some buildings and they can win some street fights, but can they be sent as an actual National Guard force to use, you know, real weapons in order to kill lots of people? Or they're still just thugs, basically?
Yeah, but, you know, the Ukrainian army isn't the crackerjack outfit that Kiev would like to make out it is. These thugs, some of them are highly trained. They can be inserted into Ukrainian units and lead them more effectively. And that's what often happens with these kinds of vanguard units.
And they are the National Guard now. That's what they call them, right? And Yurash from Right Sector is the head of it.
Sure, the head of their national security apparatus in Kiev is one of the people who facilitated the coup on the 22nd of February, and he's a well-known fascist. So what I'm saying here is that we don't really know how many there are, but in terms of Ukrainian units in that part of the Ukraine, best figures I've seen are already 10 to 20,000, and that's a lot when you're talking about just one region, the Donbas. And if they're led, or if they're infiltrated, or kind of encouraged by these highly trained dissidents, or not dissidents, but fascists, then you have a more potent fighting force. And the problem is, the challenge for them will be, that we're talking about cities here. We're talking about cities of 1 million, 2 million people. Are you going to go block to block against Ukrainian nationalists, Ukrainian pro-Russians, or Ukrainian who don't want to recognize Kiev? Are you going to try to do that kind of thing and ethnically cleanse? I don't think you want to get involved in that kind of thing, at least if you have any marbles in your head. And so the task itself is formidable, and that's part of what leads me to believe that reason will finally prevail. Poroshenko will be restrained by Washington, and if he can restrain the fascists that have already been let loose, then there could be a ceasefire and meaningful negotiations. That's my hope.
Well, at least the Americans are going to abandon them, if not rein them in. I mean, they've got to see that coming, too. If I was Putin, I would be telling Kiev, look, the Americans are already off chasing kidnapped girls in Nigeria, and they're back to Iraq, and they don't have time for you, and you know it. So come to the table. What are we even fighting about at all right now? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's why I finish up this piece reminding, or suggesting that somebody else remind Poroshenko of the bloody nose that the Russians gave Georgia. That was just, 6 years ago in 2008. That was right after that NATO summit in April of 2008, where it was not only the Ukraine, but also Georgia that was said to be by the NATO summit. We will, the NATO. Saakashvili thought that he could give a bloody nose to the Russians and pro-Russians in the adjoining province. He did so. He got really trummeled by Russian forces, and nobody came to help him. So there's an example of what happens in the end. You're right to adduce that example. The folks in Kiev should be aware of that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for your time, Ray. I sure appreciate it.
Most welcome.
All right, but that's the great Ray McGovern. He's at consortiumnews.com and at antiwar.com today. The risk of a Ukraine bloodbath. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about commodity discs from commoditydiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the backside. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code commodity disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's commoditydiscs.com.
The military industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot. though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council of the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.